It's The Takeaway. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. In the middle of this pandemic, there's a lot of questionable information flying around. And with social media rife with fake science and confusing warnings, corporations, media outlets, and even government officials are capitalizing on the uncertainty. But this is hardly the first time that casting doubt on science has been used to spread fear and disinformation. In fact, experts say that decades of undermining science related to pollution and climate change has paved the way for COVID-19 denial. Recent data from private research firm Unicast shows that in places where people are less likely to believe climate change is real, people are also less likely to have engaged in social distancing and other behavior changes related to COVID-19. To look at all of this, I spoke with Jerry Taylor, president of the Niskanen Center, a nonpartisan policy think tank and a former climate skeptic, along with Amy Westervelt, editor-in-chief of Drilled News, who's looked at how the strategies for disinformation are similar for climate change and the response to COVID-19. I first asked Jerry why denial of COVID-19 feels like a deja vu for climate denial.
Well, for 23 years, I was in the climate skeptic business before I changed my mind, so I know that world reasonably well. And the arguments we're hearing, underplaying the danger from COVID-19, challenging the body counts, complaints about the errant estimates with regards to the danger of becoming infected, are the exact same kind of arguments you hear offered against climate action. They're often offered by the exact same people, as if there's a new business line for climate denialists, and now they run into the COVID denialist business. And it's anchoring in the same sort of psychological buttons that are being pressed. Lots of narratives about conspiracy, lots of people complaining about the technocratic elites who have nefarious agendas on hand. It's the exact same wine in a slightly new and refreshed bottle.
Amy, can you take us through some data in terms of how different studies have been used to deny science, for example?
It's more qualitative than quantitative, I would say. There's sort of very specific types of talking points that you see over and over again in science denial writ large.
Can you give me some examples of phrasing or ways of presenting some of this information that you think have caught on?
It's just a bad flu stories that, you know, you started to hear early on, and now people are reverting back to and questioning the authority of whoever's saying that social distancing works and questioning models and, you know, in general, using some of the ways that scientists speak and the way that science research works to question it. And this happens in climate science too. You know, there's uncertainty baked into science. It's how scientists talk. It's part of how science research funding happens too. You know, you never read a study that doesn't end with more research is needed, because that's kind of how researchers get their next grant. So it's really easy for a skeptic to come in, or someone who wants to sort of deliberately create doubt and confusion and say, look, the scientists aren't even sure about how this is happening. Or look, models, you know, which again, the way that models work is they include lots of different variables and they include extremes. And there are definitely valid critiques to be made of how modeling works, but pointing to the most extreme possibility and saying, this is ridiculous, therefore we should scrap all models and not believe scientists is like, it's a bit ridiculous, but it's a tactic that gets used over and over.
Jerry, tell me a little bit about what kinds of work you did in the past and what insight you feel like that gives you into this moment where, as you say, climate deniers are approaching COVID-19 with a similar playbook.
Well, a lot of it is just the psychology of this. I mean, after all, if there is a market demand for something, someone's going to produce the supply. There is a market demand right now for COVID skepticism and COVID denialism. Why? Because the Republican Party, or at least the MAGA hat wearing wing of the Republican Party, is desperate to get the economy firing on all cylinders before November so that Trump has a chance of reelection. And so for that reason, there's a tremendous amount of what scientists call motivated cognition to believe these COVID denialist stories. Motivated cognition is what David Hume says when he says that reason is a slave of the passions, and where your passions go, so shall your reason go. So I really don't doubt that a lot of the people who are peddling COVID denialism have talked themselves into believing it. Bjorn Lomborg is one of the most prominent climate skeptics, even though he is not a trained scientist in this area, had a Twitter thread the other day just sounding like a flat earther with regards to the mortality rates associated with COVID-19. The same goes for Richard Epstein at Hoover Institute. I mean, it just never ends. And again, I don't really think this is so much a matter of people shilling complete garbage for a paycheck. I think what you've got here are people desperately want to believe a certain narrative. They talk themselves into believing it. And just like in the climate denial world, most of the people who are engaged in this war of denialism have no training in what they're talking about. I mean, they literally have no idea what they're talking about. But they think that they can out-argue the people who spent their whole lives in epidemiology or virology.
In the time in which that was comforting to you, what was it that you found so appealing?
Well, I mean, I was born and bred a libertarian, and so I was highly motivated to find arguments against state action to do X, Y, or Z. And so I fell into that trap of motivated cognition. But one of the things that served me well in the climate skeptic business was just cherry picking data. You know, you focus on one study, which looks like it gives you some anecdotal support for your position, and you ignore the 30 studies that have different outcomes or different findings, or you accept at face value narratives from trusted scientists that utterly misrepresent the mainstream point of view, and you peddle it as if these people are a bunch of crackpot lunatics. And it turns out they're really not. And we see a lot of that right now in the COVID debate. I mean, all of the same sort of dynamics, the misrepresentation of mainstream science, as Amy mentioned, the exploitation of uncertainty. We know a lot of things about climate change, but there's still a wide variance between the lower end and higher end scenarios of future impact. And well, the climate skeptic community feasts off that. Just like in the COVID-19 conversation, there's a lot about the novel coronavirus we just simply don't know. So there's going to be a wide range of estimates out there, and it allows people to exploit them.
We have seen, Jerry, protests around the country, and I guess I wonder for a viewer or someone who's casually observing on the news, how do you parse out who might be a paid actor and who is someone who says, I really want to open my business again?
Well, it's almost, at least as far as the people who are marching in the street or holding signs, entirely the latter and none of the former. Small business owners and individual libertarians and fed up MAGA hat wearing Trumpists and people who are generally outraged over the fact that they can't wade through a sea of dead bodies to get their cup of coffee in the morning. But what's more relevant here is who's organizing this. And it turns out that the same corporate and ideological actors that are underwriting the climate denial movement are largely involved in now trying to put together these sorts of back to work protests. There was a story last week about how a new alliance with the American Legislative Exchange Council and the Heritage Foundation, Club for Growth, and a few other ideological actors that are also involved in climate denialism have now joined together to argue at the state level for immediately reopening the economy and return to normal. So it's not as if when you see somebody holding a sign that you think is spouting nonsense, they're all paid actors who are, you know, doing it for a check. Most of the time, people honestly and legitimately believe what they say. You have to have a little bit of interpretive charity. But organization doesn't happen by itself. That's usually where the more important story is.
Amy, I was wondering if you could sort of explain the term that's called astroturfing and how it fits into this.
So astroturfing is basically fake grassroots activism that is generated or organized by an industry or political group funded kind of organization that is posing as a consumer advocacy or a voter advocacy group, but is actually pushing an agenda for a particular industry or political group. And there are tons of examples of this in the climate space. And now, you know, you're sort of seeing this in the COVID space where protesters are real, but they've been organized and in some cases kind of like ginned up by these groups that have, you know, an agenda that they want to push.
Jerry, I wonder, as a former climate skeptic, what would you say to people who are skeptical of the science behind COVID-19 right now?
One thing I've learned is it's very difficult to tell people that if they believe X, they're wrong and they should believe Z. And here's why. People don't change their mind that easily or that quickly, particularly when they have a lot of motivated cognition behind their point of view. The best that you can do in these cases is to try to open minds, to suggest that they may want to get their news from someplace other than right-wing talk radio or Fox News. I mean, if you inhabit a world in which all of your news information is coming from Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson and Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levine and Alex Jones, it's no wonder they believe what they believe. I mean, think about it. What if all of the things that, you know, say I read, or maybe you read, or others that are listening, I read The New Yorker, I read The Atlantic, I read The New York Times, I read The Washington Post, I read Politico. And what would it mean if every single thing I was reading were as dubious and problematic as what right-wing media is, except I had no idea? It's sort of like, what if you were to reverse the question, what would a Fox News viewer want to say to me to try to talk me out of my hysteria with regards to my concern with regards to COVID-19? There's very little they're going to be able to say. The best you can do is ask people to open their minds and open their eyes and look around them and to leave their bubbles, and they'd find that maybe some of the ideas they so quickly dismiss have a little bit more merit to them than they thought.
Jerry Taylor is president of the Niskanen Center, a nonpartisan policy think tank and a former climate skeptic. And Amy Westervelt is the editor-in-chief of Drilled News. The Takeaway is committed to covering climate change all this week as part of a collaboration with hundreds of other media outlets and organizations. This project is called Covering Climate Now, and you can find all our coverage at thetakeaway.org/coveringclimatenow, including from the first climate coverage week back in September.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.